Welcome in to episode 2 of Bear Ball. I'm your host, Brennan Barbu, and we got to get right into these NBA playoffs. Just like I said last week, these NBA playoffs have been lit. We're getting physical play all around the league right now. Multiple of these series, teams are playing much better defense than we saw in the regular season. If you watch NBA playoff basketball every year, that's just what you're accustomed to, and I absolutely love it. We got to start with my favorite series of the entire playoffs, the Detroit Pistons versus the New York Knicks. So, as a Detroit fan, obviously watching that game one, first three quarters, feeling great. I mean, you were watching. Cade Cunningham wasn't even having a great game. He was dishing the ball out well, but he wasn't shooting very well. He was not as aggressive as we're used to seeing him. And, you know, I thought that was going to get better in the fourth and we were going to be able to pull out game one. As I talked about in the last podcast, I thought we could go out there and take game one. I thought we would know the importance. And, you know, we definitely went out there and we played a great game through three quarters. Then the fourth quarter starts with not being able to inbound the ball, get a 5-second violation. And then on the very next offensive possession, we get a 24-second violation. So that's a terrible start to the fourth quarter. And from there on, I mean, we just fell apart. We give up a 21-0 run. Cameron Payne is out there going crazy on us. Karl-Anthony Towns had a really nice fourth quarter. And it just fell apart on us. And the Knicks end up taking game one in New York. So after that, I mean, I was not feeling great, honestly. I thought, how can we get more out of our role players than we did in that game and still win? I mean, obviously, Cade can play better. I knew that. And I thought he would play better, but in that first game, he was getting hounded by OG Anunoby and he was also getting double teamed a lot, seeing a lot of different actions, and he just was not getting much space at all. A lot of his shots were contested each time, and I thought that was going to continue in game two, but then they kind of started going more single coverage on him and trying to contain his role players, which I think is a good strategy, honestly, for the Knicks. If all of our players aren't in rhythm, then you're basically just counting on Cade to win it for us. And of course, Cade is good enough to do that. We saw so in game two. So game two, Cade plays way better. He's much more aggressive. He's getting to the paint. He's hitting his shots. And again, for the first three quarters, we just look like the better basketball team. We go into halftime with about a 6-point lead, I believe it was. And I'm almost positive we go into the fourth quarter with the lead as well. And slowly but surely, the Knicks start walking us down. Now, I know a lot of that had to do with Jalen Brunson getting to the line so many times. I'm not even sure how many free throws he had in that game, but I know that they basically all came in the second half because the free throw disparity was like all Detroit in the first half, and it felt like the refs wanted to make up for that in the second half, so they started calling everything for the Knicks. And Jalen Brunson, was hitting his free throws, and he always plays better in the second half, it seems. So he was getting them back in the game, and I was biting my fingernails, man. I was getting nervous. In those last few minutes, I believe it was tied, and Dennis Schroeder goes down there, hits a nice step back three. They weren't respecting his jumper most of the night. If you were watching, it seemed like they were letting him kind of get to his spots pretty easily, and they were getting hands up, but it was not heavily contested. So, he's been playing really well for us. JB Bickerstaff saw that enough to put him in crunch time alongside Cade Cunningham, put two point guards in there. And that's the benefit of having a taller point guard like Cade, is that you can throw in another veteran experienced point guard like Dennis Schroeder, who went out there and closed the game for us. I mean, without his points right there, I definitely don't even know if we pull out one of those first two games in New York. And without that, two demoralizing losses in New York, close games, we tried our hardest. I don't know if we could even make that a long series after that, but now we've stolen home court advantage. We're back. We're coming back to Detroit for game three. I personally cannot wait for game three. I always love the odd numbers in a close series, games 3, 5, 7, obviously. You always see who's going to get the upper hand and then if the other team can respond in the next game. So game three is huge for us here in Detroit. They have us as underdogs by 1 point as of this recording on Wednesday. So we'll see if Vegas changes that by tomorrow. But personally, I think Detroit is going to win game three. I think it's going to be another close battle. The Detroit crowd's going to be nuts, man. We just won our first playoff game since 2008. The people in Detroit, whenever our sports teams are good, Detroit always shows out every single time. The Lions, I mean, you saw what happened in the playoff games. The crowd, they always show out. So definitely excited to see the energy for game three. I think it's going to be another close battle, and I think Detroit will find a way to pull it out, man. But for these two games in Detroit, I honestly think that we're probably going to go back to New York in a split series here. Hopefully we win game three so we don't have to have that pressure of winning game four. But the New York Knicks, man, I mean, they're a good squad. They're a solid starting five. There's not like a single weakness in their starting five lineup. From the New York side, I told you guys last week, my second favorite team is New York. Tom Thibodeau, his coaching, you know, only playing seven, maybe eight players tops. It's, I mean, they don't have much depth. It's how the roster's constructed. So he wants the best out there at all times. And he's got a good squad. But Karl-Anthony Towns, he did not show up in game two. That's, you kind of got the full Karl-Anthony Towns experience through these two games. You got one game in game one where he was great on both sides of the ball. And then in game two, the production just kind of fell off, man. He only put up 10 points alongside with 6 rebounds and no assists. So pretty quiet game from Karl-Anthony Towns. And that's with no Isaiah Stewart out there, man. I have to give it up for my man, Paul Reed. He came out there and in his 11 minutes, he played, I thought, great basketball. He was hustling, playing good defense. And he got Karl-Anthony Towns a little bit bothered out there. So the thing is about New York, they need to get more production out of Mikal Bridges. They need to get more production out of Josh Hart. And I've heard a lot of people talking about running the two big man lineup, Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns, because Cat can shoot. The only thing about that is Karl-Anthony Towns likes to play outside so much that I think that he can be guarded by a player like Tobias Harris, and Detroit doesn't have to worry about that. Now, of course, Karl-Anthony Towns, when he gets hot from outside, he's a problem. It's not easy to deal with him. In the playoffs, I just don't trust him to go out there and do it every single night in a 7-game series. Now, can he do it 4 out of these 7 games? You know, you got to hope if you're a New York fan. We're getting good defense out of OG Anunoby, the best that he can on Cade Cunningham, but, I mean, Cade's going to have those nights. He's just a dog. So we'll see what New York can do to counteract this when they go back to Detroit, see if Tom Thibodeau has any adjustments to make. But that series is really physical. It's been a really fun watch, man. I just hope that they keep up this level of physicality and the refs keep letting them play. All right, next up, man, I want to talk about the Nuggets and the Clippers. This series has been amazing as well. Both games, I mean, decided by a total of 5 points. One of the two games went to overtime. So this series has been literally everything that everyone wanted it to be. You got two teams in the West who both feel like they are better than the 4 and 5 seed. Unfortunately, they're matched up against each other, so they are absolutely battling out, though. In game one, the Nuggets big three, they went out there and they balled out, man. I personally consider Aaron Gordon to be the third best player, not Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. went out there, put up 3 points, 1 for 4, and was not very good on the defensive end either. He went out there and he grabbed 4 rebounds, but, I mean, a game like that from MPJ, who is paid like your third best player, you know, normally that's not going to be good enough to win a game for you. But Denver, I mean, they got 29 out of Jokic, they got 21 from Murray and 25 from Aaron Gordon. They're also able to get 15 from Russ on the bench. So when you're able to get that kind of production on the bench, that's going to help you out a lot. They have not been able to see that kind of production in the last couple of years in the playoffs, or at least last year when they lost in the second round. They basically were just blown out there, and their top 5 guys were the guys doing almost 100% of the scoring. So when Russ can come in and take a little bit of that load off, it definitely helps. Zubac, I have to say, has been doing a great job in this series guarding Jokic. Jokic is a beast. You're not going to stop him. He's playing like a freak as always, putting up, I think it's like 29 points on about like 50-something percent shooting in the low 50s, which is really good defense by Zubac because, as we know, Jokic puts up low 60% field goal percentage normally. So, I mean, if you looked at the stats over the regular season, Zubac is one of the best defenders of Jokic. So it's not like a shock, but in the playoffs, we're used to Jokic going out there and having, you know, these amazing, great games leading his team to success. But then in game two, when they have a chance to go back to LA up 2-0, we saw, in my opinion, one of the worst Jokic games in the playoffs I've seen in a while. Now, I'm not saying he played terrible or anything. I mean, the dude went out there and put up a triple-double, but maybe I'm being a little bit rough saying it's one of his worst playoff games I've ever watched him play. But his support players gave him more than enough that he needed to win, and he went out there and he had, I believe it was 7 turnovers, and he just was playing sloppy basketball, especially down late in the game. That final shot attempt, I know he's just running out to the three-point line to put something up, but, I mean, it just didn't look like he believed in the shot at all. And when Jokic goes out there and he puts up, he shot exactly 50%, 8 of 16, and 4 of 8 from 3. I mean, that's, I mean, for a big man, 50% from 3, that's great. But, you know, 7 turnovers, sometimes that's going to kill you. And when the team has 20 turnovers, that's just too much to overcome, especially when Kawhi Leonard is going to go out there 15 for 19, puts up 39 points, doesn't really put up a lot in other stat categories, only 3 rebounds, 5 assists. But watching that game, it almost felt like watching like a Michael Jordan game in the sense that these mid-ranges, he just was not missing them. Even the 3-pointer, I mean, 4 of 7, that's really good. So Kawhi Leonard, he's not going to do that every single game, but he has that ability to still impact a game like this where he shoots almost perfectly from the field, and he also was playing very good defense. He had 2 steals and a block, and if you're just watching, he had some great lockdown moments in that game. So Kawhi Leonard, an absolute freak. They get to take it back to LA. They've stolen home court advantage. Now it's just a 5-game series. Who's going to be better out of these next 3 games? I personally still like the Clippers. I took the Clippers. And, you know, I think that in these next 2, they're probably going to split. And I think it's going to go to a game 7. But I think the Clippers are simply the better constructed team at this moment. And Jokic, as good as he is, as great as he is, I don't think that he alone is going to be enough to overcome this team, especially when he has one of the better defenders for him in Zubac every single night. So the Clippers, they're definitely in a great spot right now. The only thing I can really say about the Clippers in this series for the first 2 games is they're basically getting no scoring production off the bench. They've gotten less than 20 points each game off the bench. I mean, all their starters are playing heavy minutes, though. So if for right now, it's working. You know, I talked about this in my first episode. I thought that Kawhi in the first round could, you know, he would stay healthy and he would go out there and be a beast just like he is. And James Harden, we already saw that from game 1 to 2, there was a score regression. And I don't think it's just going to go down and down, but I think the bigger the moment, the worse you can expect James Harden to play, honestly. So do I think that they are the biggest, you know, championship contender? Not necessarily. Are they a dark horse? Could they go out there and win in the second round against OKC? I mean, if you've been watching OKC in the first round, I don't think so. But it's, you know, I'm not going to put it out of the realm of possibility at this moment. So next up, I want to just mention the OKC Memphis series, the Cavs and the Heat and Boston and the Magic. There's not much to talk about game to game here. It's going to be over quickly. The most really to talk about is, can any of these underdogs take a game or even maybe 2 games off of one of these contenders and maybe hurt them for the rounds in the future? We just saw Jason Tatum go down. Looks like he's going to miss game 3. But I don't think it's an injury that's going to keep him out. He came down kind of weird. There was a funny clip of Joe Mazzulla basically telling him to get the hell up and stop being a baby. So I definitely don't think he's going to miss major time. This is his first ever missed playoff game in his career. He's actually played a lot of playoff games. He gets consistently deep into the playoffs almost every single year since he's been a rookie. So for this to be the first playoff game he's ever missed, that is actually a testament to how healthy he is. So I don't think it's going to keep him out for too long, honestly. And the Celtics are so well constructed, I could see them sweeping this series without Tatum. The Orlando Magic can't score the ball. Even when Paolo Banchero goes out there and scores 30, the rest of his team can only put up 50. So that's not anywhere near enough to beat the Celtics, who have 5, 6, 7 players who can go out there and put up 10 points on any given night. So that series, not much talk about. Cleveland and the Heat, I personally don't think the Heat should even be in the playoffs. I talked about how I thought Atlanta would miss the playoffs, and I was right. The Heat took it. I said it was going to be the Bulls. I was wrong about that one, but I don't like the plan. I think it's stupid. They play 82 games for a reason. There's no reason to have a little play-in tournament, see who the last two seeds are going to be. You already have half of the league making the playoffs. Actually, it's more than half of the league that makes the playoffs, and I don't see a reason to let four more teams get a chance to make the playoffs. They had their chance to prove that they were one of the best eight in their conference. So it made sense the bubble year because there was a break in the season and there was so many teams who were right there. That made sense. But ever since then, it feels like we're just, you know, extra games for extra money. So the NBA is not going to stop that. You know that. But there is no reason that the Atlanta Hawks shouldn't be in the playoffs. Not that it matters that much anyway. You know, now the Hawks get a slightly better draft pick. So good for them. But I think Trae Young wanted to be in the playoffs. Would it have made it any more interesting? Probably not. But at the same time, I don't think we need it anymore. I think it's just bad for the game. So I wish they would get rid of it. They probably won't, though. Other than that, OKC Memphis, that's going to be over very quickly. Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. I just don't know what happened with that squad, man. They were tracking like this team that was going to build and build and build and eventually be this championship contender for years, I thought. And ever since Ja Morant has some off the court issues and he gets suspended and has to, you know, have mental health treatment and whatever else for the gun stuff. Now this team has been regressing and regressing ever since. Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, as much as I love him for being a Michigan State Spartan, he's not, you know, a good enough player to, you know, carry your team or anything, especially in how many games Ja Morant missed this season. It kind of hurt him. The thing is that they were in the top six seeds and they fire their coach. I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning was on that one, other than they wanted a new voice in there. They thought it was falling deaf ears, but I mean, obviously, it didn't work out very well for him, and now they're going to be out very quickly, and I don't know where you go if you're Memphis from here. I mean, I think a lot of their fans have been saying, you know, you run it back, we're talented, we still have youth, but there's younger teams who are doing more than you right now. So, I, you know, I don't know how much hope there is right there other than the fact that you have a couple solid players, but you don't have a solid team around them right now to contend. So, quickly on Pacers Bucks, I definitely think I chose emotionally when I made that pick. I just personally miss seeing Giannis go deep into the playoffs every year because he's a freak. And so I thought maybe Lillard could come back a little earlier, and it seems like he's about to come back like I predicted, but I don't know how much that's really going to help you out. This Bucks team is simply not built to contend at this moment. The Pacers are a better team. I knew that coming into the series. I knew that. They're a better constructed team. They play more like a team. They have more role players who can step up and, you know, make big plays when it matters. And, you know, right now the series doesn't even look close. They're going back to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is favorited at home. But if I had to be honest, I would not be shocked, and I honestly expect the Pacers to steal one of these two games and probably put this thing away in five or six. So, can the Bucks still do it? Of course they can do it. I mean, Giannis is playing great, but he's not playing as well as he was in that finals run. So, I guess if you could get more out of Giannis, and if Damian Lillard comes back and somehow immediately off of blood clots comes back and lights it up, but I mean, I'm not seeing it honestly at this moment. So, that definitely wasn't the greatest pick by me, if I'm being honest. And then we also have the Lakers-Timberwolves, man. So, like I said, game one, Timberwolves, they went out there and they won it straight up. I told you to take it on Barbu's bets, and that's exactly what happened, man. LeBron, he's lost a lot of game ones, I feel like. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to win the series or that they're in trouble. He's comfortable being down 0-1, and, you know, we saw that. Game two, the Lakers didn't seem phase. They didn't seem scared or anything like that. They went out there. They played great defense. LeBron has been playing very good defense in this series. He puts up multiple blocks in game one. And then in game two, he goes out there and he played some lockdown D. He had a nice chase down block. His offense, he's not been hitting the shots like he wants to. and he's not passing the ball like he used to either. But again, we're talking about a 40-year-old, okay? So this is Luka's team now. So I'm expecting Luka to be the number one, and LeBron, what you can get out of him, obviously, is great. Not that you know, I mean, he's still one of the best 10 players in the NBA. So I wouldn't say I'm worried about my pick. I know that Minnesota has stolen home court advantage, but I think I chose this to be a 6 or 7 game series, man. So I think they're going to go back there and split again. This round one has been so much fun. To have this many 1-1 series, close series. This year, I personally feel like will be determined in how Anthony Edwards plays, honestly. He, in game one, he was out there facilitating the basketball a lot, and that helps his team so much. I mean, he's not a point guard. He's not out there throwing 10 assists a night. But I think that the Lakers' best defensive strategy is to just play him like normal. And if you play him like normal and everyone else on the team does not get hot and doesn't, you know, start going crazy, I don't think that the Timberwolves have enough offensively to match the Lakers. I also think that Luka just trying to look for Rudy Gobert in one-on-ones, it slows down the Lakers' offense, and that's not what I think they should be doing all the time. Obviously, Luka one-on-one with Gobert is something you like if you're the Lakers, but Rudy Gobert, honestly, has been playing it pretty well. So it's just, I feel like the Lakers, when they've been running sets and they've been getting out in space and running, their offense has looked a lot better. So I'm sure J.J. Redick has seen it. I'm sure he's going to make those adjustments. I'm very excited to see what kind of adjustments are made on the other side as well. Chris Finch, you know, he's a defensive mastermind. I'm sure we're going to see some more physical defensive games played here. So this series has been a lot of fun, and I'm sure it's going to keep being a lot of fun. And the last series that I have to talk about is the Rockets and the Warriors. So when I was making that first video, I said that I was pretty confident the Rockets would beat whoever they're matched up with, whether that was Memphis or Golden State. And after watching game one, a little bit nervous, honestly. Game two in Houston for this young of a team, it is absolutely imperative that they win this game. They must win this game. And if they don't, it's probably going to be over very quickly. First off, you're not getting enough from Jalen Green right now. He has just simply not been giving you anything. He has not put up 20 points in, I believe it's like 5 or 6 games. And if he's going to keep going out there, I think he's going in most of these games. He scored 7 on 3 of 15 shooting. So that's definitely not going to cut it if you're Houston. Houston's half-court offense is just ugly, man. I knew that going into it, but I thought that they'd be able to, you know, force some more turnovers, get running. And, you know, we need to see more of that in game two. The defense was great. I mean, this game was a fun defensive battle. But, you know, Steph Curry is Steph Curry. He's going to hit some of those crazy fadeaway, you know, jumping into the crowd shots. And you got to do whatever you can to overcome that. And honestly, they did. They were down by 20-something points. They pull it in kind of close late, and Golden State then extends the lead. But in this game too, man, if Houston wants a chance to, you know, not destroy this great season that they've had, getting the number two seed with this young of a roster, they need to go out there and they need to play better half-court offense. Şengün and Fred VanVleet, it feels like that is literally the entire offense. Steven Adams went out there and he played great. I mean, his offensive rebounding was another thing that was keeping the Rockets in it. He is huge compared to the Warriors. When he's on the court, it feels like a man amongst boys. They really just have no one to stop him. I mean, they're throwing out Kevon Looney still, and he's nowhere near big enough to guard him. Draymond Green can't guard him. So Steven Adams' minutes, I think those should go up if you're the Rockets. Other than that, man, you've just got to find a way to get running, because this half-court offense is not good. I mean, Ime Udoka, he's shown that he's a good coach, so I believe he can make the adjustments needed to go out there and win this crucial game too, because if they don't, this series is going to be over. Jimmy Butler, man, I mean, he's back in full playoff form, it feels like. I put up 25 in this game. He went crazy in the play-in game. And if you got playoff Jimmy next to Steph Curry, it's a dangerous combination, man. Draymond Green, he's out there playing his defense. He's still a great defender, one of the best, not the best of all time. I would say he changed defense forever, though, the way that he literally is able to guard 1 through 5. But the lack of size for this Golden State team could end up hurting them. I'm not so sure if it's going to hurt them in this series. I'm still taking the Rockets in this series. I think the Rockets win tonight. Then they can go out there and they can make this a hard-fought 6-7 game series, man. But we're going to have to see them go out there and play better half-court offense, because without that, they simply have no shot. I mean, when you go 20% from three and 55% from the free throw line, I mean, it's just hard to win basketball games like that, especially high-level playoff basketball games against a very experienced team with championship medal. So the Rockets have got to figure out how to fix that, man. So, I mean, that wraps up my NBA, first weekend / 4 or 5 day recap of the NBA playoffs. So with that, man, I mean, you should know what time it is.
It's time for Barboo's Bets.
So, I mean, unfortunately, man, Barboo's Bets last week didn't look so hot. I mean, I gave you Detroit at New York +7. I gave you Milwaukee at the Pacers +5. And Minnesota at the Lakers +4.5. The only one there to hit was Minnesota versus the Lakers. Detroit at the Knicks, man, game 1. I still feel like that should have hit. The Detroit Pistons were there the whole game. They're up by 10 going into the fourth quarter, I believe it was. And, 21-0 run, and they fall apart. So I still feel like that was a decent bet, even though it didn't hit. Milwaukee at the Pacers, just silly. Just a terrible bet. Never should have done that one. Not even close to hitting. And then I told you that Minnesota at the Lakers was a good bet for game 1. Minnesota, they're the younger team, more energized. They wanted to come out there and get that game 1 W, and they did that. So my same game parlay bet also, unfortunately, did not hit. It was, centered around the Bucks winning the game, and that was not even close to happening. So Giannis putting up 30-plus, that happened. Giannis getting 10-plus rebounds, that happened. He did not make a three-pointer. He took one, but he missed it. And, they did not win. So that +700 didn't mean anything because it didn't hit. So I got some more bets for you this week, man. I'm really hoping that this one's better for you. Let's start with the spread. So to start off, we've got the Detroit Pistons in game 3 at home as 1-point underdogs. It's basically a coin flip. It's a pick 'em, and Detroit is going to win game 3, man. That crowd is going to be nuts. Cade is going to come out here and he's going to cook. He's better in Detroit than anywhere else, man. He is going to be great. I think that, role players in playoff games, you can always expect them to be better at home. Expect Tim Hardaway to hit shots. Expect Malik Beasley to be hitting the shimmy. And I think the Pistons go out there and take game 3. Then I got Denver Nuggets +5 in game 3 at the Clippers. Now, I'm not so sure Denver is going to win game 3. I think that it's at +5 because we're not 100% positive about Michael Porter Jr.'s health. He played a really good game in game 2. He was hustling. He heard all the noise about him not being prepared, and he played way better in that game. So if he is out, then it's going to be tough for Denver to compete. But at the same time, he gave you nothing in game 1, and they went out there and won. So I think +5 for this series at this moment has proven to be too high. The point differential through 2 games is 5. So I feel confident that Denver can keep it close there and lose by less than 5 or go out there and win it straight up. And my third pick is going to be Minnesota -3 at home for game 3. I think Minnesota goes out there and they fix some of those mistakes they had in game 2. Anthony Edwards goes out there and he facilitates the ball better. And the role players play their role better than they did in game 2. I think that Minnesota goes out there and wins game 3. That defense should be just as good as ever. The calls should be going their way because they're at home. So I'm that's what I'm feeling for the spreads, man. Take Detroit +1, Denver +5, and Minnesota -3. Now it's time for the same game parlay. This one's built around my Detroit Pistons, man. We got a Detroit Pistons money line, usually just a little bit more juice than that +1. Might as well take it, right? Then I'm taking the over on 213.5. I know this has been a defensive series, but 213.5 is pretty low, honestly. I think that both these teams should put somewhere right around the 110 mark up. If that happens, you should hit that comfortably. And alongside that, I'm taking Cade Cunningham to put up 29 plus. I simply think Cade at home, he's going to go out there, drop another 30 bomb, and he's going to lead us to a W, man. You know, if you're feeling that with me as a Detroit fan, you got to go ahead and smash that. That's going to give you plus 445. So, you know, not too bad of odds for, you know, a bet that I personally think is not that hard to hit. So there's Barboo's bets for the week, man. Tell me what you think in the comments below. All right, and last but certainly not least, we've got to talk about WrestleMania 41. Personally, I'm mainly going to be talking about the main events here. There were some other good matches, especially that Fatal 4-Way with Bron Breakker, Penta, Dirty Dom, and Finn Balor. That match was definitely fire. Dirty Dom taking home his first Intercontinental Championship, I believe it was. So huge for him. A lot of people thought Bron Breakker was going to go in there and win his first Mania match, and that's not what happened. Other than that, though, let's get into the WrestleMania 41 Night 1 main event. So CM Punk, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns, they went out there and they tore the freaking house down, man. Personally, I was rooting for CM Punk. He was huge when I was WWE, you know, big into my WWE fandom. And he finally gets his main event for Mania. I technically don't count Night 1 as a true main event. I don't know if he does. But the main event of Mania 41 was John and Cody, let's be real. But either way, that match was fire, man. I love that twist end with Paul Heyman. I mean, Paul Heyman has history with CM Punk and Roman Reigns. Everyone knew that going into the match. And to see him sit there the whole time playing his role perfectly, and then at the end, the double switching up on CM Punk and then switching up on Roman too. It was just perfect, man. Seth Rollins, it continues the story with Seth and Roman. I mean, what is it? 10, 12, whatever years in the making. These two have just, they've defined each other's careers, honestly. And to see them, what looks like they'll probably go into a deeper feud, maybe even have a one-on-one at Mania next year. You never know, but it was a lot of fun. CM Punk leaves his first Mania main event, maybe his only Mania main event, with a loss. It's standard for CM Punk's career, you know, losing the biggest of big moments, but he went out there and he had a good performance, man. I'm sure he's proud of himself, and, you know, watching his entire career has been a lot of fun. Who knows where he's going to go from here, but, you know, he's definitely not done. And then let's get into Night 2, man. The Night 2 main event was, I thought it was pretty good. Cena goes out there, wins the 17th world title, becomes the undisputed GOAT of the WWE, as he deserves. I mean, watching John, I've literally watched him pretty much his entire career, man. And, you know, I was there for when he was, you know, kind of garbage, and then he became the Dr. Thugonomics, and then he became, you know, what a lot of us hated, which was the hustle, loyalty, respect garbage. And, you know, to see him come back and turn heel, it was fitting, you know. He was going to do anything to win number 17, become the GOAT, no matter if he had to lie, cheat, and steal, man. And, I mean, he hadn't won a match in, you know, 1,000 days, or, well, more than 1,000 days. I mean, you can't believe he's just going to go out there and just beat the champion, you know, simple, middle of the ring, you know. Travis Scott comes out there for, you know, just about no reason at all, and it was hilarious just watching him walk to the ring. He actually took a bump. I have to say Triple H has been good at getting these celebrities to take some bumps, man. Speed in the Royal Rumble took a bump. Travis took a bump at Mania, and I mean, it was a lot of fun. You know, John Cena, you know, he told Cody he would have to make a choice to be the villain to win the match, and he didn't. You know, he drops the title. John kicks him straight in his fucking nuts, and he takes title number 17 home with him, man. It'll be a lot of fun to see where they go with this. I'm pretty sure John said his last match can be Survivor Series, which isn't going to be until, what, November? So I think what they're going to do is they're going to run with John leave the WWE with the title, you know, because Triple H loves his long title reigns, so there's no chance it's end anytime soon. So it'll be interesting to see who John faces over this title reign. We'll probably see Cody at least one more time. Cody's title reign, I mean, honestly, if you have to ask me, I don't think it was terrible. I don't think it was great. I just think that sandwiched between two goats, you know, the 1,000-day reign of Roman Reigns and number 17 for John Cena, I mean, it's a tough place in history to fall for Cody Rhodes, honestly. Cody Rhodes had such a great comeback story. We all wanted to see him finish the story, and he did. But, I mean, past that, I don't think the title elevated him much. We'll see where he goes from here. I mean, he's definitely not out of his prime or anything. The fans, you know, live in the stands definitely love him. Maybe online people hate him, but everyone that pays for their tickets, they all scream his name. So we'll see what's going on, you know, next with his career. I just want to say, man, thank all of you for watching this episode. You can find this on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and more. So I mean, I've had a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed watching this episode. So I'll see you guys next week. Don't forget, you only live once, so don't waste time on negativity. And peace.